Welcome to today's ILTA podcast interview entitled Continuously Monitoring Controls in a Cloud Environment. My name is Corey Reitz. I am a cyber assurance architect at Sandia National Laboratories, and I am your moderator for today. I am thrilled to be joined by our speaker, Sarah Louise, a cybersecurity consultant. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me, Corey. I'm so excited to be here. Again, my name is Sarah Louise. Currently, I'm a freelance cybersecurity consultant, actually looking for my next full-time opportunity at the moment. I really specialize in vCISO work, governance, risk, and compliance, and most importantly, implementing and creating security programs. Specifically in the legal industry, I've been working in the legal industry for 6 of the 11 full years of my career. I got started in the Air Force, actually, where I was tricked into it by a recruiter. I always tell the story. They told me it would be really exciting. I'd be fighting hackers. It'd be like the movies. Really, I was put into information assurance, which was much more of a governance, risk, and compliance heavy side of things, which it worked out. I really like it. I found really my niche. And I've been, like I said, doing it for 11 years now. So no complaints. But yeah, that's me.
It's a great career, but it's not as sexy as what's advertised.
Yes, no.
So I'm with
you.
It's
not like the hacking and you're learning coding and all this. It's not like that, but it's all right. Yes. I like it.
Very critical, but a different side of things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just as important, but not what was advertised to me.
Totally. Totally understand. Well, thanks for sharing your background. Well, let's get started with our first question. What is continuous monitoring generally? And in your opinion, why is it important?
Yeah, so generally continuous monitoring it's really a combination of technical controls and processes or procedures that you use to monitor them. Well, I don't want to use the word monitor in the definition. So I'll say to review and have oversight and assess how it's operating against security requirements and IT baselines. I think specifically in the cloud environment, it's most important because you don't have access or ownership or involvement of any type in most cases in the actual operations of the systems, the physical locations, the databases that hold your data. But you, as specifically looking at law firms or legal industry organizations, you have the legal obligations to that data to maintain it and protect it and ensure that it's being maintained appropriately. So continuous monitoring gives you that insight into how it's actually being monitored against your requirements, against general security best practices. It's really the way they say trust but verify a lot. You trust the vendors, you hope that they're doing what they say, but this is the verify step to make sure that they're actually doing what they tell you that they're doing.
No, that makes a ton of sense. Since we don't own the infrastructure,
yes,
this is our way of finding out what's really going on with our systems.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess they're not ours, but finding out what's going on with our data that's in that system, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Gotcha. Very good. What are some of the benefits of implementing continuous monitoring in a cloud environment? What have you seen?
I think that the benefits, I would say that they're kind of three main categories. I would say it's quality, security, and then privacy is really a big new one that people are considering now. So quality, you're reviewing it for capacity, speed, even sometimes licensing. You may be responsible for the licensing counts in that environment. You may own it, but the cloud vendor just actually puts them into place and administers them. So you have to make sure that all of that is being managed appropriately. From a security perspective, it's the standard logs. So security logs and user account activity logs, malware, firewall operations, what's going in and out of the firewall. There could be identity and access management considerations as well. So things like what are the privileged, what are the admins that manage your accounts doing, that manage your systems doing? Who's getting access? How long has that access been had? What are they accessing? All of that you can get from continuous monitoring. Really, we're seeing in the industry a lot more now SOCs being put into place to manage a lot of that. That's really helpful. And I consider that it should be a security baseline requirement. I think that the legal industry has been a little bit slower to adapt it, specifically because they do have all this cloud infrastructure, but it really does work well with cloud infrastructure. They have a lot of integrations with these systems already. And then the third one was really privacy. So there's things to be considered like geo data, geo geotagging of data. There we go. So do you know where your data is being housed? Is it staying within the continental United States if it needs to stay in the United States? There's a lot of data classification requirements. So is it being held, if you have PCI data, for example, is it being maintained separate from your other data? You can get all of that information from continuous monitoring, and all of that data is really critical. You also have to have someone that can interpret that data though as well. It's one thing to collect it all. It's another to actually be able to action upon it and review it. So all of that really goes into continuous monitoring. It really gives you a lot of benefits into seeing if your data is being managed appropriately. You can take it for internal audit purposes. You can take a look and say, we know that this most critical data is in this place, so we want to do these types of reviews. It gives you just so much insight into it all.
Awesome. So my takeaway there is it's kind of a triad. We've got the quality, security, and privacy insights. Absolutely. Into those three areas. Awesome. Good to know. Moving on a little bit, what are some of the good sources for security controls that we should consider?
I would say taking a look at that list that you have originally is going to give you a good idea of what baseline requirements to start with. So you're looking for logs, you're looking for malware management, you're looking for capacity management, whatever your general requirements are, you're going to take it and you're going to do a gap assessment and basically say, this is what we have right now versus what we need. All of that information on what you need, you can really get from the general industry. So you can take a look at SOC providers and they'll tell you, here's what we review. You can compare and contrast those. But you also really want to look at your client requirements as well, especially in the legal industry. There's a lot of different clients. You could have a financial institution that tells you, here's what we need you to monitor, here's what we need you to maintain. The legal industry is really lucky in the case that oftentimes you're going to be told exactly what you need to monitor by your clients. There's very little times where, unless you're a very small law firm and you just work specifically with individuals, most of the law firms that I work with and I see, they get that information straight from their clients. They tell them exactly what they need to monitor. The larger banks like JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, they even come in and do audits regularly. So you'll see that a lot on the financial services side. I think it really does come down to just having an individual who knows, can take a look at your environment and translate it and say, here is what you need from a security perspective. So having, whether it be a third party, a lot of organizations are having vendors come in and they do assessments. They can do, if you're GDPR, for example, if you are required to maintain GDPR compliance, you can have a GDPR assessment done. They'll come in and tell you what those requirements are. If you have client requirements against ISO 27001, which again is a huge thing that we're seeing right now in the industry, SOC 2, all of those are really good ways to gather sort of your baseline starting point as to where you want to go. And that gives you your security roadmap, if you will.
All right. I think you've sold me on, I need to do this continuous monitoring thing in the cloud. So where do I start? So I let's assume I'm working with one of the, you know, main vendors, Amazon, Google, or Microsoft. How do I get started on actually doing this monitoring in the cloud?
People would really be surprised how many of these monitoring tools are already built into their agreements. So my first step is always to say, look at your current agreements. If you have some sort of agreement with AWS, Microsoft, there's just quite a few now that have so many built-in security tools, or you can upgrade to those security tools for very little money. Microsoft M365, their built-in, their native system is really, really good. The legal industry is really starting to take that on and adopt that because they already have E5 licenses in many cases because they just need the functionality. Even E3 from Microsoft comes with a lot of benefits from security perspective. Then from there, you can take a look at, there's a lot of large names in the industry. You can look at the four quadrants, is that what it's called? Where they have, I can't think of what it's called now. Oh, man.
Oh, you got me on this one. Four quadrants.
I know.
I'm not sure.
If you Google the four quadrants for security, you'll find it, I'm sure.
We'll do that.
The magic quadrant. That's what it's called.
Oh, like Gardner. Gardner magic quadrant. Okay, now I'm with you.
There we go. So they have really good recommendations there. They go through security tools, SOCs, SIEMs to collect your logs, those types of things. Firewalls, again, also have a lot of really good monitoring tools automatically built in that people just are not configuring. All of these things also have a lot of opportunity to work together as well. There's a lot of cooperation amongst the larger tech organizations, at least in the sense that they let you sort of mesh these products together. ServiceNow, for example, if you have ServiceNow, there's so many different modules within ServiceNow for security. They have a business continuity module. There's a lot of tools that people just don't even know are at their disposal.
Awesome. That's great. That's a lot of good information. So I've started out and I may be trying to figure out what are the best practices that I should be following. Do you have any advice about that? That, you know, this, there's many ways it seems like to configure things, but how do we follow this, the industry best practice and standard?
Really, the main source of information that I always push people to is NIST. NIST has a standard on almost everything, and they're extremely comprehensive standards. If you don't have someone that can interpret those standards, there's a lot of third-party vendors that can come in and do, like I said, assessments for you. They can come in and take a look and say, what do you have now versus what NIST actually requires? There's free checklists online with SANS. SANS is a really good really good source of information. SANS Institute, they have secure coding requirements. They have development requirements. They have baseline security checklists. A lot of really good information there. But I really do recommend everyone have at least one security professional on their team employed full-time with them. I think it's a really valuable resource to just have someone there. Security has a lot of what I call technical translation, where if you just read the standard, it doesn't make sense. You have to have someone there who understands technology, security, and business operations to be able to say, here's what it says, but realistically, this is how we can implement it. A risk-based approach is really a good starting point. If you make a risk register where you say, here's the risk that we're trying to mitigate, remediate, accept, whatever it is, here's the risk that we're faced with. You can take a look and say, here's a roadmap, here's a project plan to make that risk lower. And you can actually document the risk to show in any sort of way. You can do quantitative, qualitative. You could say however you want to say that the risk is being lowered. Mm-hmm. Law firms really speak in terms of risk a lot. So I find that this is a really effective way to go about it, because lawyers understand risk more than anybody. Absolutely. Right. So they really can go in and say, this is the risk we have. Is this an acceptable level of risk? They understand all of that talk already, all of the jargon associated with risk. So then you only have to translate the tech into risk talk for them, instead of having to translate tech into risk into regular business operations. It really is sort of there's multiple languages that we speak as security professionals, and having someone that can actually interpret that data is just, it's so critical. If anyone takes anything away from this, I would say that's really important. There's so many clients that I work with that they just collect all of this data. They have a SOC, they have antivirus programs, and it's running, but they don't actually have anyone that understands what those systems mean, how they incorporate into other systems, what you can actually use the data for, how you can translate that and use it, how you can bring it up to executives. Really just having someone there to understand all of that is so important.
So the big takeaway, get your security translator.
Right? Yes.
To talk to all the stakeholders.
Someone who's just an IT person who can actually understand it. There's a lot of really good IT talent out there that can translate security talk, but just you have to have one individual who knows how firms operate, what all of this means to them, and can bring it to their attention in a way that makes sense to them.
That totally makes sense to me. I've seen where, depending on who's interpreting a requirement, you could be spending millions of dollars or thousands of dollars to try to meet a requirement and to give some assurance, and balancing that out to find the right solution is huge. So I think your counsel is very wise. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for taking your time out to share your expertise with us and sharing some of the experiences that you've had. I know that the ILTA audience will really benefit from this podcast. And so I thank you on behalf of the organization.
It was great to be here. Thank you.